Welcome back. Happy Seger to those of you in Seger. Who's not? Scott, you're not in quarantine. You're not in lockdown.
Not really. Right.
Well, the rest of us are. The rest of us are.
Here in the U.S., it's every man for himself, I think. Every person for themselves, I think. It's kind of
that's the Chicago ethos.
The American way.
Right. Anyway, so here we are. I'm Jeffrey Sachs from Web Yeshiva, and we are here on Daf Tet in Tet Omer Aleph in Masechet Tanit. We're still a lot of Agadah. We're still in this long section of Agadah. So the Gemara says, Omer B'Yochanan. Remember, Rabbi Yochanan had, there was this mnemonic, these five things, these five statements. So this is the final statement that Rabbi Yochanan has about rain. So Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Matar b'shvil yachid, Parnasa b'shvil rabim. Sometimes rain will fall in the merit of one individual, even though when it rains, you know, like what do they say? Ner le'echad, ner le'elef, right? You turn on the lights, everybody benefits from it. So if it rains, it's for the benefit of everyone in the area, I guess. Who's that making noise? But sometimes it rains in the merit of one deserving person, even though lots of other people can piggyback on that and chaperein and benefit from that rain. But parnasa, the kind of a gift of some kind of livelihood, that is only granted in an area for the community as a whole. And it could be that one individual alone would not be enough. Now, I've mentioned many times that rain and parnasa are almost synonymous, but not exactly. Now, there are all types of things that Hashem could do to aid in parnasa. I mean, including, you know, the stock market, right? In other words, if there's a depression, if there's an economic depression, which very often in the ancient world was connected to rain, to agriculture, to other things. And it could be that there was plenty of rain any given year, but maybe there were also lots of locusts, which would have affected the crops, which would have destroyed the livelihood of the whole region. So rain is one characteristic of livelihood. The connection between Geshem and Gashmiut is obvious. But there are other things on, let's say, the larger Parnasa economic scale. So what's his proof that rain will fall even for the benefit of an individual? Dichtiv, there's a verse here in the Brachot, Yiftach Hashem Lecha, to you, singular, et otzro hatov. Hashem will open up his bountiful storehouse for you, individual. Latet matar artzecha, to give rain for you, your singular land. So from the use of the singular, you see that matar, rain, can come even in the benefit of an individual, and other people can piggyback on that. Parnasa.
I remember that the Rav talks about this in Kol Dodo Fik, right? He says that the idea that rain can fall for a single individual is a sign that, like, you know, all the stuff that happened with the UN founding and all the things that was like this massive institution was created for the benefit ultimately of the founding state of Israel. And he mentions that. Uh-huh. I don't even quotes the Gemara per se, but he says it's like right. The idea of a rain can fall for a single individual.
Right. Well, that's kind of taking it out of context, because there you could say that the whole UN was created for a single individual state, but an individual state, certainly the individual state of the Jewish people, is rabim. That's the definition of a communal agency, the Jewish people.
I think the idea that many people could benefit from something, even though it's actually directed for a specific person.
See that the Rav did not have that bumper sticker that said, you know, unwanted nobodies. Just another way he was iconoclastic in his political views. Parnasah b'shvil rabim, and how do you know that general parnasah welfare of the on the larger scale comes for the rabbim, for the community. Kakatuv, dichtiv, hineni mamtir lachem lechem. I will bring down mamtir. I will cause to rain down on you, plural. Here we're not actually talking about matar rain, but we're talking about what? Lechem, the man, right? Man is, of course, maybe even more than rain, identified as parnasa. Identified as parnasa, because in other words, in the desert, all of our needs were taken care of. It's not just that Hashem sent rain and the rain caused the grain to grow, and with the grain, if we were lucky, we would be able to grind it into wheat, and with the wheat, we'd be able to bake bread. The man was a three-course meal, all at the ready. Lechem min hashamayim, almost like the description of Gan Eden. You know, that's what the Midrash says about Gan Eden. That in Gan Eden, after the curse on Adam and Chava, Adam is told bezeata pecha tochal lechem, right? You'll have to work by the sweat of your brow. You'll earn your daily bread. So the Midrash obviously jumps into that exegetical vacuum. If after the banishment from Eden you have to work in order to get bread, well, how did you get bread in Eden? So the Gemara said, the Midrash says that the loaves of bread kind of grew out of the ground fully formed. You didn't need this planting grain and threshing and kotzer and tochein and lisha and etc. It came min hamuchan. You didn't. And now today, if you want a loaf of bread, bread being the symbol of sustenance, matelach macha. Now, if you want bread, you have to do all these different milachot to get a loaf of bread. I mean, we don't. We just go to the store. But somebody had to do it. And they certainly were much more connected to that process. Although now everybody's doing with the sourdough. It's, you know, I can't tell you how much sourdough is taking over our kitchen. Sometimes I come down in the morning and it's halfway up the stairs. But in normal times, you just go to the store. But that's the man. Man lechem min hashamayim is almost like that picture of Gan Eden, where the loaves of bread sprout fully formed out of the ground. But it's the bread is brought about through matar. It rains down on high, the man. And of course, there's a custom that, you know, probably none of us have, even though some of us probably might want a little more parnosa. There's a custom that some people have to recite in the morning at the end of davening. In all the sidurim, you have the tefillah leparnasa, where people recite the parasha of man from Parashat Beshalach. They recite that paragraph describing the man, and it's meant to be some kind of talisman, some kind of skula, that Hashem should give us increased parnasa. But you see from the plural language, lachem lechem, that general parnasah for the whole community is given only in the merit of the plural, of the community, of the masses. So now the Gemara says, metve. Metve is an attack question. Does anyone remember what kind of attack a metve is? It's an attack. It's an attack from a braita. Meaning it's an attack against an amora from a more authoritative source. In most cases, a braita. It could be a mishnah, but in most cases, it's a braita, right? From a tanaetic source. You know, it's like in Gemara poker. You know, a tana beats an amora. So meitve. The Gemara just established that rain only comes in the... that parnasah, rather, only comes in the merit of the masses. But now we have a Tanaitic statement that says, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Shlosha Parnasim Tovim Amduli Yisrael. There were three great figures that brought sustenance to the Jewish people, that were the Parnasim. A Parnas is a leader, like a communal leader. Like in Eastern Europe, the lay leadership, you had the rabbonim, the rabbis, and you had the Parnassim. The Parnassim were the Balabatim. They were the lay leadership. Usually they acquired their position in the community because they were wealthy. They were able to lifarnes the community. They were the ones that paid for everything. They paid for the cheder, and they paid for the mikveh, and they paid for the rabbi's salary, and all the other things that a Jewish community needed. So a parnas is a leader, but it's a leader who provides the kind of sustenance that the community needs. So the Braisa says there were three great parnasim tovim for the Jewish people. Ve'elohin, Moshe, Aaron, or Miriam. V'shalosh matanot tovot nitnu al yadam. And they brought three wonderful gifts for the Jewish people. V'eluhein, be'er, v'anan, uman. In the desert, we had the well, and we had the clouds of glory, and we had the man, the lechem min hashamayim. And these gifts were brought in the merit of Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam, Aaron, and Moshe. Be'er, the well that followed the Jewish people and provided them with water, bizchut Miriam. Amud Anan, the pillar of cloud that led the way and which protected them from their enemies, bizchut Aaron. Man and the manna, bizchut Moshe. So what's the kasha? What's the stira here?
The Parnassa seems to be coming in the school of one person instead of the whole everyone.
Yeah, Bidyuk. In other words, the Gemara had earlier said that Parnassa comes only in the merit of the whole community. And here, man, ve'ein Parnassa gedola mizu. This is the epitome of what Parnassa means, to receive the man, came in the merits of Moshe, who was a wonderful, distinguished, exquisite, one-of-a-kind individual, but Becholzot, he was just an individual. So now, having introduced this, before the Gemara can resolve the contradiction, having introduced this source, it wants to discuss it. Now, there's really, at this point, everything else is somewhat parenthetical. But having introduced the source, the Gemara is prepared to discuss it, until it then explains how one source beats another, or how the two, you know, ideally, the Gemara's ideal resolution is to explain why it's not really a contradiction. So, Meta Miriam, when Miriam died, Nistalek HaBe'er, the well dried up, or it disappeared, it was no longer accessible to them. Shne'emar, in Parshat Chukat, V'tamat Sham Miriam. V'chtiv batrei v'lo hayam ayem le'eda. Because after the death of Miriam is the description of the fact that there was no water, and what happened when there was no water? The people started kvetching and got into trouble. V'chazra b'schut shnehem. So Miriam dies, the well disappears, and then it returns in the merit of the remaining siblings, Aaron and Moshe. Met Aaron, nistalku anane kavod. When Aaron died, the cloud of glory disappeared. Shne'emar, v'yishma hakanani melech Arad. He heard that Aaron had died, and with Aaron's death, the Anan disappeared, and with the disappearance of the Anan, the Jewish people were vulnerable. You know, it's like we have now, like we have Kippat Barzel, you know, that protects us from any Scud missiles or anything else that comes. So, like, if in Gaza they were to hear that, God forbid, the Kippat Barzel disappeared, you know, this, what do they call that? Like this defensive system that shoots down the rockets before they can do anything. So, if God forbid they heard that Kippat Barzel disappeared, it would put us in a bad situation. So the Gemara says, Mashmu Hashama. What did Melech Arad hear? What did our enemy hear? Shama shemet Aharon v'nistalku anane kavod. He heard that Aaron died, and with his death, the cloud of glory, this defensive shield, disappeared. Uchasavar nitnalo reshut lehilachem b'Yisrael. So he figured now he can go to war against the Jewish people. They're vulnerable. V'hainu dichtiv v'yera'u kol ha'eda. Vayiru kol ha'eda ki gava aron. The pshat of the pasuk in Chukat is the whole nation saw that Aaron died. So Omar Rabbi Abahu al tikre v'ra'u ela v'yera'u. Don't say the whole nation saw, witnessed, observed that Aaron died, but say yera'u. When Aaron died, they became visible. How did they become visible? Because that we had this invisibility cloak, so that all of the surrounding nations we were hidden from them, and that was the Anon HaKavod. So when Aaron died, don't al tikre the people saw that Aaron died. Read when Aaron died, or because Aaron died, the people became visible, meaning they became vulnerable because the cloud disappeared. Kidadarish Resh Lakish, Domer Resh Lakish, the word ki, Meshamesh Ba'arba Lashono. This is a famous statement of Resh Lakish, that the participle ki, in the pasuk says, Ve'yiru kol hayda ki gava Aaron. Everyone saw ki, that Aaron died. So what does the word ki mean? So Resh Lakish says it has four different meanings. E, dilma, ella, deha. There are four different meanings of this word, of this participle ki. E, it can mean if. Dilma, it can mean maybe. Ella can mean rather or but. And deha, it means because. So Resh Lakish says that's how you read the pasuk, right? Because Aaron died, the people became, however you read that other word, visible, right? It's like a cause and effect. The word ki here is like a code word to tell you that the death of Aaron caused something to happen. And that was the vulnerability that came about with the absence of the Anan. Chazru Shnehem, Bishut Moshe. So Miriam dies, the well disappears, but it comes back in the merit of her two brothers. Aaron dies, it makes it sound like both the cloud and the well disappear, and it comes back now all wholly in the merit of Moshe. When Moshe died, Nistalku Kulan. When Moshe died, all three disappeared. These miraculous things that escorted the Jewish people in the desert. Part of the movement from life in the desert under Moshe to life in Canaan under Yehoshua is a movement from, is almost a kind of like weaning away from the miraculous. Shene'emar, v'achid et shloshet haro'im beyerech echad. Now we have this pasuk in Zechariah that says, I will extinguish, I will cut off, v'achid, right? Like what do you call that with the animals?
Extinction.
The extinction, right? The three shepherds, Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam, will go extinct. They'll be wiped out in 1 month. V'chi b'yerech echad meitu? So the Gemara says, what are you talking about? They didn't all die in 1 month. Right? V'halo, Miriam meita b'nisan, v'aron ba'av, u'moshe the following Adar. They died different months altogether. Ela melamed shenitbatlu shlosha matanot tovot shenatnu al yadan v'nistalku kulan b'yerech echad. No, it's true. They didn't. They each died at their own time, but the gift that they left behind remained in the merit of the surviving siblings or sibling. So even though Miriam died many months earlier, her well remained, and even though Aaron died, in Av, his cloud remained until Moshe died in Adar, and then all three disappeared. And with the disappearance of all three, then it's like the passing of a generation, because the gifts of all three disappeared. And that's what the pasuk in Zechariah means, that the three shepherds, the three people who watched after us, who protected us, like the shepherds over the sheep, the three of them disappeared in one shot, in one month. When Moshe dies, they all disappear. So Alma, Ashgachan Parnasa B'Shvil Yachid. So you see from this whole long story about Moshe and Aaron and Miriam, that it was all in the zchut of Moshe. And that contradicts what we said earlier, that rain only comes, that Parnasa only comes in the merit of the whole community, and not in the merit of even one righteous, exceptionally righteous individual. So there's a stira. So what is the Gemara? So what is, pretend you didn't prepare ahead for a second, right? So when you're confronted with a contradiction like this, what's the Gemara's first reaction? What's the Gemara's first response? How does the Gemara tend to get out of a pickle like this? It's what I call apples and oranges. You think this is a contradiction? No, we're talking about two different cases. Sometimes the Gemara will say, Hocha b'maya skinan. In this case, what are we talking about? We're talking about something else. Or the construct we have here, Sha'ani Moshe. The case of Moshe is exceptional. It's true. Generally speaking, we do not give Parnassah in the merit of one person. However, Moshe is exceptional. Shani Moshe Kevandila Rabimhu Boi Kirabim Dame. Moshe is considered like a rabim, like a whole community, because he asked for the parnasah, not for himself, but he asked on behalf of the whole community. That's, by the way, it's interesting that the Gemara does not raise this point here, but this is an idea that's embedded in an idea that we have in the Gemara in the fourth parak of Brachot. Le'olam lishatef inish nafshe bahadei tzibura. Another, by the way, another idea the Rav discusses at some length at the beginning of Kol Dodi Dofek, if David already mentioned Kol Dodi Dofek tonight. But the Gemara in Brachot says, Le'olam lishatef inish nafshe bahadei tzibura. A person, when praying, a person should always join himself to the community as a whole. As an individual, we have almost no rights. We have almost no right to petition God. We petition God as a member of a collective. This is the Rabbi Soloveitchik mentioned this in the context of describing the power of communal prayer. That we can really only ever pray for ourselves in the context of a larger entity. We never pray for the healing of an individual. It's always betoch shar chole Yisrael. Right? In other words, any one person's merit, no matter how righteous they are, is insignificant compared to the merit that they have as being a member of a larger collective. Right? No one ever mourns alone. Right? They mourn betoch shar avle tzion v'yushalayim. Right? All mourning that people suffer and experience is part of a larger historical collective in mourning. And you connect your own emotional experience, which we don't negate. We don't say you have no individual feeling, you have no individual merit, you have no individual experience. But we say that your experience is filtered through the prism of the greater collective. So Moshe, because his Bakasha, that God should take care, that the man wasn't for himself. He didn't ask for man for himself, right? It was for behalf of the whole Jewish people. Everything that Moshe received was on behalf of the whole Jewish people, Right? The only time he ever made a personal request, he was denied. He said, you know what, let me go in. Let me take a look around. Let me have a week's vacation in the King David Hotel. As an individual, he was denied. But when he asked for the Jewish people things, he was answered. So because he asked for the masses, he is like the community. Rav Huna bar Manoach v'Rav Shmuel bar Idi. Now we're on a piggyback of a piggyback. Having introduced the pasuk in Zechariah about the three shepherds, now the Gemara wants to discuss that pasuk. Rav Huna bar Manoach, Rav Shmuel bar Idi, Rav Chia mivastonia. I'm not sure where Vastonia is. Havu shchiche kame. Do you have the David? You have the Steinsaltz?
I have it on Safari. I can see if it has they have now background information there, so I can see what it says where Vastanya is.
I'm not sure where Vastanya is.
It's apparently Hungary. there's a place called Vastanya, Hungary. I assume that's not what the Gemara is talking
about. It sounds Hungarian, but no. So these three Amoroyim, Havu Shchiche Kameda Rava. They were Talmidim of Rava. They would frequently sit in front of Rava to learn Torah from Rava. Kinach nafshei de Rava atu l'kamei de Rav Papa. When Rava passed away, they needed to find a new Rebbe. So they started going to the shir of Rav Papa. Kol eimat dahave omar lehu shmata velo hava mistaber lehu chazu miramzi ahadade chalashdate. So whenever Rav Papa would say something in the shir that they didn't like so much, they would look at each other. Remember, the Gemara says they would like miramez. They would like hint to each other. Rashi has a different gear. So Rashi says, achuze lahadede. They would look at each other. They would wink at each other. They would, you know, he saw that the students were, you know, communicating non-verbally in the class. And it was clear to him that they didn't agree with what he was saying. They didn't like what he was saying. Rashi says, Marin umabitin zelaze. They would look at each other. Delo salkaluhu shmata kerava. Right? He knew that these three Talmidim that had come from Rava's Sheur, they didn't hold him up as being equivalent to Rava. And he didn't like the comparison. So the Gemara goes on. Hold on, let me make this bigger. Akure Bachelma. He had a posuk came to him in a dream. This is an idea. It's a kind of like a minor form of nevuah, like, you know, like a bat kol or something like that. Chazal had this idea that if a pasuk occurs to you in a dream, it might have significance. It might be an omen for something, although the Gemara is very clear that it's very clear that it's not clear, right? That you can't always take action on this. It's not always obvious how to interpret the dream. And what pasuk came to him in a dream? That pasuk, where Hashem says, I will cut off the three shepherds. So what did he think? He thought it meant that these three Talmidim of Rava would, that they'd die. And then he would be relieved, I guess, from their critique in his shir. Lemachar ki havu miftere mine. The next day, when they were leaving the shir, amar luhu lizlu rabanan bishlama. Go in peace. Meaning, why go in peace? Lechu b'shalom. Because he thought that they were, you know, going to meet a bad end and they wouldn't be back to class the next day. See, Rashi says, Akruye hayu makrinoto mikra ze bechalom. This posuk came to him in a dream. V'achin et shlosh teroim, b'yerech echad. Shirotzin la'onshan b'shamayim mishum d'mechasfele. He thought that they were being punished from on high because of the embarrassment they caused him. It seems a little harsh. It doesn't seem that he didn't daven that they should be killed. I presume he didn't want them to be killed. But he thought that he interpreted his dream to mean that they were going to be punished for what they had done to him. And, you know, he wouldn't see them. So that's why he says to them, Lechu l'shalom, Lechu b'shalom. This Fasemes says that, you know, like there's a difference to Lechu b'shalom and Lechu l'shalom mean different things. Lechu b'shalom means that's what you say to the dead. When you're parting from the dead at the funeral, you say Lechu b'shalom, go in peace. And that's what he says here. He says to them b'shalom because b'shlama, because he thought that they were going off to die. And you don't say that to living people. To living people, you say Lechu l'shalom, go to peace. So this kind of a diuk, I guess, is how they get this idea that he thought that they were going off to die. But what happened? Rav Shimi. Another case. Rav Shimi Bar Ashi have a shachiach kamei de Rav Papa. Rav Shimi would sit in the shir of Rav Papa, have a makshe leituva, and he would ask really good questions. Really hard questions. Excuse me. Yom achad chazei dinfol alape. One day he saw this Rav Shimi, saw that Rav Papa was doing tachanun. He fell on his face. He was doing tachanun. Shmoi de Omar Rachmana litzlan michisufa de Shimi. Hashem, merciful Hashem, save me from the embarrassment of my student Shimi. Meaning, save me from these embarrassing questions he would ask. He would ask really hard questions. I wouldn't have answers. I'd be embarrassed. So he overheard the Rebbe davening that the questions of the student shouldn't cause him embarrassment. Kabila le shtikuta. So Shimi accepted upon himself a decree of silence, that he wouldn't ask questions anymore. Vetulo akshele. And he would not ask him questions anymore. That's a little problematic because, you know, we do have that concept that we saw not long ago of Mikol Melamdai Hiskalti, Michavarei Yoter Mehem Mitamidai Yoter Mikulam. That the real way that a person gains knowledge is through encountering the rough and tumble of engaging with the students and the questions that they ask. So these portraits of these teachers, a great Amoroyim, is problematic because it shows them as somewhat, somewhat flawed.
It's possible not exactly what Rashi said, that he was worried about embarrassing Rav Papa, but if he had heard about this earlier story of these guys who had, given Rav Papa a hard time and were killed, then maybe he was worried about that.
Okay. Maybe.
Wasn't worth the chance of asking a question to Shira and end up, not coming back.
Maybe. So, this idea, this idea about Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam, that these gifts were given in their merit, goes against a different Gemara. The Gemara in Bava Metzia, Daf Pei Vavam Beis, says, hold on, let me make this bigger. The Gemara says, here. The Gemara is discussing the story about Avram and the three angels that come. So the Gemara says, "Bischar shlosha zachu l'shlosha." In the merit of three things, we merited three things. In the merit of three good deeds of Avraham, the Jewish people merited three things: bischar chema v'chelev zachu laman. When Avraham served the food to the guests, that created maseh avot siman lebanim. Serving the food to the angels, to the malachim, to the guests, created the zchut, the merit, that we should be fed in the desert with the man. Bischar v'hu omed aleihem, that Avraham stood to greet and serve the guests, even though it was the third day after the Brit Milah, it was very hard for him. Zachu la'amud ha'anan, because he stood, the cloud stood for us. Bischar yukach na ma'at mayim, right? He takes the basin of water and he gives to them that they should wash their feet. Zachu le'be'rah shel Miriam. They merited getting the Be'erah Shel Miriam. I mean, it's like a question, right? Because it shouldn't be called the Be'erah Shel Miriam. It should be called the... It should be called the Be'er Avraham. Right? Because it was in his merit. Rashi says, Zachu l'shalosh, shalosh matanot shenitnu lahem b'midbar al yedei Moshe v'Aaron. Interestingly, Rashi leaves out Miriam, even though the Gemara mentions her explicitly. So our Gemara in Tanit goes against the Gemara in Bava Metzia. The Gemara in Bava Metzia says the whole thing was in the merits of Avram Avinu. And our Gemara says it was Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. So there are a few different answers that are given. The Maharsha here in our Gemara says that in the schut of Avram Avinu, we would have merited these three things at moments of great need. In other words, there would have been man, but it wouldn't have lasted all 40 years in the desert. And there would have been the well, which would have been there if there was like a case where there was absolutely no, it was either the well was going to miraculously show up or we were going to die of thirst. And the Amud Anan wouldn't have been there every day. Right? Interesting, it doesn't describe the Amud Ha'esh, Balayla, but in other words, it wouldn't have been there every day to protect us. It would have been there, I mean, the enemies don't try to get us every single day for 40 years straight. It would have been, but instead, we had it all the time, right? Having it all the time. You know, what's that? What does the Gemara say about Ein Adom and Misha Esh Lo Pat Besalo and Misha Ein Lo? Right? In other words, just to know that you have food in the cabinet makes you less hungry. Right? You know, like right now, I'm not hungry. I had a big dinner, right? But I know that I have, like, you know, if I got hungry later, thank God there's food in there. The cupboard is not bare, right? The knowledge that the cupboard is bare, even if you're not hungry at the moment, itself is a kind of source of distress. So the existence of these three things at need, yes, that was in the merit of Avram Avinu. But their ongoing, daily, ever presence, that was in the merit of Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. The Ben Ish Chai says that Hashem intended to give these gifts to the Jewish people generations earlier in the merit of Avram's actions with the three malachim. But something went wrong at each stage. And really, by the time we came to need them, we had already exhausted our merits. He explains what happened with each one. Like, so for example, when we're leaving Mitzrayim, And what do we say? Hotzeitem otanu b'midbar lahamit et kol ha'kahal hazeh b'ra'av. You know, all the time we're kvetching. You got to take us out. There's no food. We have nothing. So when we said that, that was enough to ruin the merit of the man that we deserved from Avram Avinu. And it was only returned to us, even though we were no longer deserving, because of the merit of Moshe Rabbeinu. And a similar thing with when they complain that there's no water, and Miriam's merit, the well comes back. And the same thing with Aaron and the Amud. So the kind of template of the Schut comes from Avraham. We mess it up with our kvetching, and it comes back through those individuals. Rav Chaim Shmulevitz in the Sichot Musar. Rav Chaim Shmulevitz was the Rosh Hashiva of the Mir in Shanghai. When they left Lita during the war and they hung out in Shanghai, and then they came to Eretz Yisrael, so he was the Rosh Hashiva of the Mir. And he wrote a few Musar Svarim, one of which is called Sichot Musar. So he says that the Schuyot are like seeds. You have a seed, you know, like Jack and the Beanstalk. You get a magic bean, you get a magic seed. Right? Without the seed, you can't grow anything. There is no, in Ba'olam Hazeh, after HaKadosh Baruch Hu was done creating the world, there is no Yesh Miayin. So the Schut from Avraham Avinu is the seed. But the fact that you have a seed doesn't mean anything. Right? If you let we got like a gift of sunflower seeds. You know, like one of those little packets, like you go to the Mishtalah, there are those little packets of seeds with a picture of the sunflower on it, and you know, you rip open the package, and then you take the little envelope and you put it on a stick, and you know what I mean. It's been sitting on our kitchen counter probably for about 10 years. Maybe if we plant them, we'll get something, and maybe they're already just completely dead. But I guarantee you one thing. No sunflower is going to grow in that envelope sitting on my kitchen counter. So Avraham Avinu provides the seed, but it's the careful tending and watering and pruning and planting and plowing and all of the other malachot that are required for the schut to actually blossom and flourish. So it's a kind of partnership. Avram planted the seed. Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam, they watered it, they tended it, they took care of it, and they made it actually flourish and prosper and grow, which actually fits in. I mean, it's a mixed metaphor, but when Zechariah calls them ro'im, well, that's like what a ro'e does. I mean, a ro'e is to sheep, as a ganan is to the garden, right? In other words, he protects the ro'e protects the sheep, and he feeds the sheep, and he makes sure the wolves don't come and get the sheep and kill them and all of those other things. So that fits in quite nice. Okay, now the Gemara goes on. Let's go back to our Gemara. The Gemara now says, having finished with Rabbi Yochanan, the Gemara says, Va'afresh Lakish Savar Matar Bishvil Yachid. Reish Lakish similarly thinks that rain can fall in the merits of an individual. The Omer Reish Lakish Binayin LaMatar Bishvil Yachid. Dichtiv Sha'alu MeHashem Matar Be'et Malkosh. Hashem Oseh Chazizim Umtar Geshem Yitain Lahem Le'ish Esev Besade. Also in Zechariah. Hold on a second. Yes, a parak earlier in Zechariah. So what's this pasuk? The pasuk says, "Shalume Hashem matar be'et malkosh." At the time, what is the malkosh? Is the end of the rainy season, right? Yoreh is in the fall when the rain starts. The malkosh is the final rain. So at the end of the rainy season, I guess if there wasn't enough rain, I guess if you need more rain after the rain is supposed to start, you say you can ask Hashem for rain at the Malkosh, at the end of the rain. And even Hashem, who makes Chazizim, right? Chazizim are thunder clouds. Umatar Geshem Yiten Lahem, and he will bring down showers of rain. La'ish Esev Basode, to the man, grass in the field. So what does the Gemara do with this pasuk? Yachol Lakol. So I might have thought that the rain comes Lakol. It comes for everybody. Like I said earlier, Ner La'echad, Ner La'meah, Ner La'elef. If it rains in my backyard, your backyard's also going to get wet if we're living together. So Sadatav, hold on a sec. Wait, I lost my place. Oh, Yacholoko Talmud Lomar Laish. No, so the pasuk says even for an individual, right? Hashem can do it even for one individual. Esev Basadeh Yacholakol Talmud Lomar Laish. He can even make one blade of grass grow if he wants to, if he has a need for it. Talmud Lomar. Wait, did I skip a line? Yes, Sadeh, right? Yachol l'chol sedotav. Talmud Lomar Sadeh. He Sadeh, Yachol l'chol Sadeh. Talmud Lomar Esev, right? And it was not only, it was, a person might have like a lot of fields, but Hashem, if he wanted to, could make it rain in the one field that needs it. And not just in the one field that needs it, for the one blade of grass that needs it. Ki hadarav Daniel Bar Katina. And this is like the story of Daniel Bar Katina. Havalei, hold on a second. Havalei hahi ginata. He had a garden. He had a garden. Kol yoma hava azil v'sayer. Every day he would go out and walk around and inspect his garden. Omar ha mishra bo imaya. This patch of vegetables needs rain. V'ha mishra lo bo imaya. And that patch of vegetables doesn't need rain. Or water. V'ata mitra u'mekashke kol hecha dimiboy le maya. And the rain would fall, a precision rain shower would fall only in the, if his tomato plants needed rain, but his cucumbers didn't, the rain knew exactly where to fall. My Hashem oseh chazizim. What does it mean? Hashem makes chazizim, thunderclouds? Omer Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina, milameid shekol tzadik v'tzadik, HaKadosh Baruch Hu oseh lo chaziz bifnei atzmo. Hashem makes an individual thundercloud for each individual tzaddik, because it says chazizim, plural, right? So why not just say he makes, like, talk about thundercloud in the category? So no, each tzaddik, everybody who deserves it, gets their own thundercloud. My chazizin, Omar Rav Yehuda, porchot. What is this kind of cloud? It's a cloud that like fly. You know how it is like on a very rainy day. You see like how the clouds are like sometimes you have these big gray massive clouds, and it's like always amazing how they like move across the sky with such speed, right? The power of the wind to move to porchot, that they fly along. Omer B'Yochanan, Siman Lamatar Porchot. It's a indicator, it's a sign that there's gonna be rain when the clouds are moving fast, when they're poreach, when the wind is moving. My Porchot, Omer of Papa, Eva Kalisha Tute Eva Samichta. When you have a thin cloud, like a flat cloud, a pancake cloud, above a very thick cloud. That's what a rain cloud is. So this is what we call, a nimbus cloud or a cumulonimbus cloud. You see over here, these are rain, you know, they're all different types of clouds. Remember, you learned this in the seventh grade, right? There's the big wispy clouds that are very high up in the atmosphere, right? There's like 7,000 plus meters above. And then there's the rain clouds, which are much lower. And those are the clouds that bring the rain. So a nimbus cloud, right, or what here is called the nimbostratus cloud, it has to have a certain amount of vertical mass to contain the rain. So what usually happens is it's a big round cloud, but at the bottom it's flat. Right, it appears flat. Now we don't. If you're underneath it, you can't tell because it looks just like a big round mass. But if you were on level with it, this is what it would look like here in the picture. And this is what the rain. So the description in the Gemara is really quite accurate to what we know about how cloud structure works and which clouds bring the rain. There's something about the big puffy cloud on top with the flat pancake bottom, which brings the rain. What time is it? We have two more minutes. Omer of Yehuda. Oh, back to the Gemara. Hold on. Omer of Yehuda, Nihila Mikame Mitra Ate Mitra. So there's another set. Well, this is like meteorology. Like, how do they know? How do they know how to predict the weather? Right? We have a bat mitzvah coming up in the family a week from Shabbos. Our niece is having a bat mitzvah. So everybody's nervous because we're on lockdown. We can't have a regular get together. We're trying to figure out, like, will we be able to, like, have davening together, just the family in the backyard, and have a meal in the backyard or something. So now it's 10 days away, 11 days away. So like the long range projections are very unreliable at that rate. So in the ancient world, the long range projections were like, maybe you'd be able to know what it's going to be like in a couple hours from now. So what was the sign? So Rabbi Yehuda says, Nihila Mikame Mitra Ati Mitra. So you know what a sign that it's going to rain is? If it's drizzling. Nehila, if it's drizzling now, that's a pretty good sign that the rain is coming. Batar mitra, psik mitra. And you know how the rain is going to stop? If after it's been raining pretty heavy, all it's doing now is drizzling, that's a pretty good sign that the rain is on its way out. So if Yehuda, maybe he was joking. I don't know. You know, people, what's that expression, you know, like about the weather? Like, everybody talks about it, but you can't do it. Everybody talks about the weather, but you can't do a damn thing about it. So like, you know, like what it'd be like if it's very cloudy out and it's drizzling now, chances are it's going to be raining pretty soon. And if it was raining and the clouds are going away and the rain is lightened up, chances are it's over for the day. That was the best they could do. Mikame mitra ate mitra. So the idea that before it rains, it drizzles. Simancha mihulta. It's like a, what do you call that in English? The thing you put the flour into, a sieve. Not a sieve. A napa. What do you call that?
A sifter,
right? So, you know, like, if you hold up the sifter and you put the flour in, so before you start shaking it, it's really going to come down. But even if you're just holding it still and you put the flour in, it's going to drizzle. Some grains of flour are gonna come out even before the heavy rainfall of flour when you're sifting it. The Batar Mitra Pasik Mitra, and what's the analogy for Rabbi Yehuda's idea that after it rains, it drizzles until it stops? Simancha, it's a little, I mean, it's hard to imagine. He said this, Charya de Ize. It's, pardon me, it's like goat poop. You know, if you ever go to the zoo, or if you have, in Keturah, do you have goats? Do you have any, what do you have down there? No? So, but we've all been on Tiul, and we see the goats. So the goats, you know, the fecal matter of the goats come out in these little pellets. So first it comes out like a whole blop. That's the heavy rain. And then there's always like a little trickle, little blops afterwards. That's the why we needed this kind of easy way to remember you know, when it's going to start raining, when it's going to stop raining, and comparing it to goat poop. I really cannot tell you. I am at a loss to try to explain that. Okay, we'll stop here on Daf Tet Omid Bet, and we'll continue next week. Hope everyone is good and healthy. I hope people get their vaccines if you're able to get your vaccine, and soon we'll be able to see each other again.